I'm very well, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Doing okay, and I did read a lot about the footballers going off social media. I believe the jockeys involved over there in the UK also decided that maybe to send a message they too would go off social media. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was the boycott of the three main social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, was led by football, and it was a coordinated campaign across football in Britain. Other sports followed, so cricket and rugby followed as well. Over here, the Professional Cricketers Association and Professional Rugby Players Association. Now, we were very keen to support it because, probably the same as with the jocks down under, our members receive dogs abuse on social media, and sometimes they get it. People have lost money, they're going to get abuse, but sometimes it really is disgusting abuse, including threats. So we wanted to support it, but the tricky thing we had, it was a huge weekend of racing here in Britain at the weekend. It was the start of the Plat Jockeys Championships. It was the 2,000 and 1,000 guineas. So it did make it challenging for us. However, there was a lot of support across racing over here to join in, and once that happened, it was a no-brainer for us to support it. And whilst it was voluntary for the jockeys, we weren't demanding that they join us. I think the overwhelming majority did.
Well, you're correct. In this country, it's an ongoing problem, and I'm not underplaying the importance the footballers have, but I guess they're part of a team. Jockeys, in many cases, their own business, and they're riding one horse for themselves, for connections. Punters are having a bet, and as you say, at the end of a day's racing, they come home and they go onto the Twitter or the Facebook and suddenly see message after message criticising them. And, of course, I guess these social media forums are managed, you know, in case there are swear words or derogatory comments to a point, but I guess it's very impossible to police criticism, and that can line up in the truckloads, can't it?
Yeah, and I think most professional sports people, whatever sport they're playing, completely accept that criticism is going to come their way for their performances. You know, I'm old now, but, you know, back in the day, we'd all sit in a pub or watch any sport at home, and you could criticise the performance of players or jockeys, and you could slag them off. But it was in privacy. Now, what social media has done is that's public. So that criticism is one thing, but it's abuse that is different. And I know from football in particular, the vile racist abuse that so many footballers receive regularly, that's going completely unchecked, and bearing in mind that racist abuse can be a criminal offence over here in Britain. I think it's just, we've all decided it's enough. Now, you're not going to stop the idiot who's at home angry from necessarily posting that. But what we're calling for is for these social media companies to take responsibility for what's going on their platforms and to take action. And we had an example just on Friday. So we'd announced that we were joining the social media boycott, and one of our jockeys received a threat targeted at his children with the hashtag RIP after it. And that was from an individual who posted something similar before and had been reported to the social media platform, and absolutely nothing had happened. So it's what sport is calling on to change, because it affects all of society. I came off Twitter 3 years ago myself because it was just a cesspit. I think it's got worse over the last 12 months with people being in various stages of lockdown throughout the world. And we're really saying it's enough.
We're chatting to Paul Struthers online from the UK. He's the chief executive of the Professional Jockeys Association. In the past week or so, the riders in the UK went off Twitter and social media for, I think it was 4 days, joining many other high-profile industries in staying away from Twitter in protest to some of the terrible, terrible posting and messaging they get. So, Paul, going forward, once they resumed, in many cases, getting back onto the horse in terms of social media, I hope there was not any backlash. People are waiting for them to come back online. Or if some writers realise they don't need social media going forward, where do we go from here?
Well, look, I know the other player associations over here will be monitoring the situation really closely. We're not so naive that we think it's going to stop overnight. It's not. We get sent some of the abuse our members receive because we try to keep a kind of log of it. I've got no doubt it started again. There was some criticism over here that we decided to join the boycott on a big racing weekend with people saying, oh, it's like, you know, you're whining, you're complaining, it's not going to change anything. But it's that kind of attitude doesn't change anything if you just decide you're going to stand idly by and just accept it's part of the job. I don't think, and we don't think, you should accept it unless the social media platforms start doing more about it. I've got no doubt you'll see these boycotts happening more often across sport. I think given the experiences internationally from sportsmen and women across the world, I think you'll see these boycotts just getting bigger and bigger unless the social media companies really start getting their act together.
Paul, away from that topic, while we have you on the line from the UK, we might ask you a few other topics that are similar to this country. We mentioned the social media at times can be very nasty towards riders. I was reading that John Gosden is now part of a new consultation group on the use of the whip. It's an ongoing issue in this country. There are lobby groups and discussion and going forward what should be done, what's expected. Can you first of all give us the Professional Jockeys Association's view on the whip and what you expect to happen or what you hope will or won't happen going forward?
Well, the situation here in Britain at the moment is the British Horse Racing Authority announced a review of the use of the whip or crop in racing. They announced it, I want to say, at the end of 2019 or at the start of 2020. And then obviously with COVID and everything that entailed, it got delayed. So we understand that consultation will get cracking later this year. We don't have an exact date for it. And that steering group that was announced will kind of oversee that whole consultation process. So as it currently stands, our position is that we'll fully engage with that consultation process. We're already engaged with it at its early stages. I don't believe that the BHA have an end game in sight. I mean, we're seeing it across the world. Regulators are under pressure over the use of the crop in racing. As we all know, issue of perception rather than reality. It's a really complex issue because, you know, I think it's in New Jersey, in the States, they've announced a ban on the use of the crop for encouragement. So it can only be used for safety purposes. I know that's the direction of travel that some regulators and governing bodies want to go in. But I think the PJA's view at this stage is we urge great caution against what appears to be a race to be the first to do that. Because you've got to look at the whole ramifications of whatever changes you make. You know, we're an international sport. Now, I know we don't have an international regulator, but we're an international sport, international competition, and international runners are hugely important to the health and wealth of the sport, and fans love, you know, that international competition. So we just need to be really careful. But at this stage, we haven't formed our position. We'll engage in that consultation, and we'll engage constructively.
Paul Struthers with us, Chief Executive, Professional Jockeys Association, the UK, taking our call. And to a final topic, it's a major topic, the pandemic and racing coping over there, as you would know watching on. We've raced on in this country, been very fortunate with our a situation with COVID, but we never know what's around the corner. We cross fingers, but there's no doubt Australia has done extremely, extremely well to have a reasonably normal life compared to many parts of the world. The UK now is improving. Racing is starting to welcome people back on track. But can you take us through from your position and the jockey's position, how they've coped, how the mask wearing, the distance, the protocols to follow, and whether things are being eased or are there things that will be taken forward that will remain?
Yeah, so all the protocols, I mean, we had a period of just under 2.5 months where we weren't able to race at all. So we resumed on the 1st of June last year. Obviously, all the protocols have changed, but they're the norm now for the jockeys, whether that's the mask wearing, whether it's the 2 meter distancing in their changing room. I think it's obviously been a strange experience. I mean, I've been racing, and it is ever so strange, you know, being at the likes of Royal Ascot, the Cheltenham Festival, the Grand National, and there are no crowds there at all is eerie. But yeah, as a country, at the moment, we are doing really well. Now, we've got low infection rates, relatively speaking, very low death rates now, although our numbers collectively have been appalling over the last 12 months. You know, it's close to 150,000 deaths. Owners are now allowed back on track. We've got another important date in the government's roadmap out of COVID that comes up in a couple of weeks' time. There is talk of crowds coming back. Some of the sports are piloting crowds coming back. So for the last 2 weeks, there was the World Snooker Championship at Sheffield. They had a full audience in for the final. There was a concert that took place at the weekend somewhere with a crowd of 5,000. So there's a whole combination of things going on in our society over here to try and kind of steer society out of COVID and into some form of normality. How that looks for racing at the moment is still a bit vague. When I don't think there's any race courses that are part of the government sport pilots. I know they're keen to get race goers back. Obviously, jockeys are keen to get race goers back and for there to be some atmosphere on the track. But it's important that we do that safely and don't put anyone at risk. Obviously, our vaccination program seems to be doing really well over here with over half the population vaccinated. I think I saw that quite a significant proportion of that number have now had their 2 vaccinations. So look, I'd anticipate we start to get crowds back in the next few weeks, even if they might be at modest numbers. And the riders will still be riding under some form of restrictions for some time to come. And it's important that we just don't rush out of those restrictions because, you know, I don't know what it's like in Australia. We've got friends who live in Melbourne. I know over here, most people are still working from home. If I got COVID, unless I was seriously ill, I'm going to be able to sit at my laptop and keep working and nothing will change in that regard. But for jockeys, obviously, if they're a close contact of someone who tests positive or if they get COVID, they're not going to be able to earn a living for the 10 days that they've got to self-isolate. So it's important that we come out. It's important that we recover from COVID, but it's important we do it in a measured way that doesn't pose a risk to the jockeys or anyone else.
And how are rider numbers going through the ranks? We had a big forum here at our radio station about a month ago, and some of the interesting topics that were discussed were right at the grassroots level, whether it's track riders and people working at stables. They're certainly not well paid. I guess the consensus would a lot of them do it for the love. They have to get up in the early hours of the morning, and certainly they're not paid as well as some other professions, and they're trying to attract people to do those jobs, very mundane at times. A lot of riders now, it seems to be there's no problem in getting young women are becoming quite attracted to riding, not as much the men in the apprentice ranks and so on. It's an interesting point right now for the racing industry in terms of attracting the riders of the future. How is that part of your profession going?
It is tough to make a living being a professional jockey in Britain. You know, our prize money situation's well known. we've got roughly 380 to 390 professional riders over here. Around 220 of those are either apprentices or conditionals. A conditional jockey is the equivalent of apprentice over jumps. It is difficult. You know, we've done some independent research, and it would suggest that our jump jockeys, on average, earn less than £20,000 a year from race riding. And for a flat jockey, it's less than £40,000 a year from race riding. And when you add in the hours they are doing, that we don't have track work over here, obviously, but they're going in the morning to ride work, racing in the afternoon. Our fixture list over here, we race 360 odd days a year. We really struggle to get defined breaks for the jockeys. I think you're right, they do it for the love of the sport. And I think if it's, they'd look with some envy in many ways in Australia and some of the initiatives that are over in there. Jockeys over here pay for all their insurances. You know, they're not funded by the track. They're not funded by the governing bodies. They're paid for either by themselves or by us as an association. And I think the biggest issue is mental health as well. You know, there's been a lot of research on jockeys' mental health over here. We provide a lot of mental health support for jockeys, so we pay for them to get one-to-one mental health support, as does the Injured Jockeys Fund. And from the stats that we had last year, around a third of our jockeys accessed some form of one-to-one mental health support last year. Now, on the one hand, that's brilliant. They're accessing support. The stigma about talking about mental health and well-being is going. And it's brilliant they're accessing the support that's there, but it's also quite frightening when a third of your jockeys feel that they need to get that support in the first place. So it is a real challenge. I think racing over here, it's a challenge for everyone. It's a challenge for racing staff. It's a challenge for trainers. It is not an easy way to make a living. And as has been said many times, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. You know, whatever part of racing you work in. So it is a huge challenge for us. And I just really hope that when we come out of COVID, as we come out of COVID, that it isn't just more of the same, that we don't just go back to doing things how we used to. I think there's plenty of evidence now to say that what the direction of British racing for the last 15, 20 years hasn't worked. It served certain sectors well, but hasn't really improve the sport at all. So look, these are challenging times on so many levels, but hopefully the sport's got the will to pull together and improve things going forward.
Hopefully or expecting? You sound as though you're cautious in saying that.
I'm cautious because I'm aware of some of the conversations that are going on behind the scenes that suggest to me it's just going to be more of the same. So the onus is on us to keep the pressure up. Work with the other sectors of the sport, because it's important. You know, we want racing not just to survive, we want and need racing to thrive. And there's some really encouraging signs through lockdown. You know, the television figures for ITV, who are the national broadcaster of racing here, have been really good. The turnover figures on betting have been really good. You know, so there are some positive aspects. But it's important we understand why those positive aspects have occurred in the last 12 months and embrace them and look to steer racing in a direction that follows those trends rather than just goes back to the way we've been doing things for the last 15 years.
Paul, very interesting information for our racing audience and those in this part of the world, and we'll keep in touch. You've covered some very important topics, and cross fingers going forward, things do improve. And thank you for taking the call. All the best there in the UK.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. You take care.